be more complicated than that.
There's something very ecclesial. Mm-hmm. That's a big word for very churchy about your vocation then too.
Mm-hmm.
So it is Jesus and the church that has you doing trans work in Texas.
Yes.
I just want to appreciate that juxtaposition to begin with. Because part of the reason I think that resonates as being true is because we're laughing at it.
Yes.
Welcome back to The Heartburn. Today we are joined again by Sarah Capostasy, who is the Director of Clinical Services at Out Youth in Austin, Texas. We pick up where our conversation last left off. We were asking Sarah about her spirituality, but we went far beyond conversations of self-care or maintaining a spirituality to asking about what drives a whole person's life. What makes a person do the work that they do, especially if it's costly and exhausting? For Sarah, that answer, at least in part, was Jesus, the Bible, and the church. And that's why she does trans work in Texas. I think you'll want to listen into the rest. This is Doug Harrison. Welcome to The Heartburn. You've said seminary and St. David's Episcopal Church a couple of times.
Yeah.
Come on now. Do you mean to tell me? I mean, I'm making this setup wrong because, I mean, again, this is a gay Christian person hosting a podcast.
Right.
But how on earth do you be a person of faith and so active in the trans community? That seems like an oxymoron to... Again, even progressive people who feel fine with people being trans, this seems strange.
Yes. It seems strange to me sometimes too, quite frankly. Like, and so, I guess the first thing that comes to mind is a thing I've been thinking about a little bit and actually, again, talked with my partner about last night is just, again, living in late capitalism, I think the word Christian and Christianity has a real marketing problem. I think it has a real connotation to it that is so far away from the Jesus that I understand and the Jesus and the Christ that like sustains me in the work that I do. And so that's the first thing that I'll say is I think that I've almost wanted to like use a different word. I've almost been to that place where, you know, I'm like, I love Michael Curry, who's the bishop of the Episcopal Church. And like, he talks a lot about the Jesus movement. Like we are, you know, the Episcopal branch of the Jesus movement. And I'm like, I'm gonna just use that instead. Because I think in our larger American culture, especially like the idea of how Christian is presented is just, it's antithetical to the way that I view spiritually, particularly the person of Jesus and what he said and what he came to do. And this idea of using Christianity and this faith to keep children in cages at the border or to deny trans people the ability to do a very basic human function or to hold up patriarchy in a way that's incredibly detrimental to half the people on this planet. And you could go on. And just like the history of colonialism, which is actually also tied to all of these issues, in my opinion. So it does. It makes it really, really hard. So I think what I have to come back to over and over again is, A, I think my faith is one that is very much lived. I think through action, and I do like the idea of kind of action and contemplation, sort of more of the mystical sort of Richard Rohr sort of approach to Christianity and spirituality.
Who actually runs the Center for Action and Contemplation, and again, we'll provide links for that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So at the same time, I want to say that like spiritually, the contemplation side is a growth edge for me. I mean, I feel like sometimes I'm so informed, or I really live out my faith through the action piece, but I know it's a really important aspect for my own self-care, which is a hard thing for me to balance sometimes. So I have no idea if I answered your question, but hopefully that's a start.
No, and actually I want to, there's a two different roads I do want to walk down.
Yeah.
Let's come back to, I'll put a little flag in talking about the what you said, the learning edge of, not, that was not quite the words, but the learning edge, the contemplation is a learning edge for you in this
yes.
process.
Uh-huh.
But when you were talking about earlier, I heard you talk about in Louisiana, mm-hmm. early in your experience, you're discovering systemic issues.
Right.
And that this vision of justice that you, it was evolving at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'm trying to say it back in my own words, so it's correct yes. me at any point. So as you're seeing that, that sounds different to me
mm-hmm.
than me being able to dismiss most of this conversation by saying that Sarah is just a liberal. I think it's very easy to dismiss you as being mm-hmm. a liberal, but the kind of language that you were using around justice and the mm-hmm. systemic stuff is not unique to Christianity, but at all, mm-hmm. by any stretch of imagination. But I heard echoes even at that point.
Yes.
So part of it sounds to me like, based upon my experience with other people and familiarity with this, you're here because you're Christian.
Yeah.
I mean, you do trans work mm-hmm. not because you're a liberal, just you happen to fall on that spectrum.
Right.
This is God's call.
Correct.
For your life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How does one experience that? How does that unfold in your life where you've come to know that, like, this is... And you actually said, maybe this is a good entree point. You said, it's a funny story how in seminary I ended up doing my internship at Out Youth.
Uh-huh.
Is that part of
a little
the call
bit.
Here?
I will say, though, like, you sparked me to think about, you know, while I was in seminary, I believe it was Yoder. There's a book called The Politics of Jesus.
Yeah, John Howard Yoder.
Yes, that was pretty influential for me and my understanding. You know, as was, I just, like, as I mentioned earlier, did this presentation at St. David's, and the title of our presentation was, Who Do People Say That I Am? Mm-hmm. And so Caden really beautifully explained, like, how Jesus, in the way he expressed his identity throughout kind of the Gospels, really is queer. Like, how Jesus really transcends boundaries and ideas about, A, people's perception of who he was, and B, sort of busted open categories that folks at the time, and I would argue we still today, seem to hold as dear or essentialist that are not.
Mm.
And so that fundamentally for me is an absolute connection to the work I do around gender and sexuality. And so that's a piece of it, I would say. But then I think also kind of books like The Politics of Jesus, or there's another book I led a small group about at St. David's called Queer Virtue. And it's by an Episcopal priest named Liz Edelman. And, you know, what I loved about that book in particular is it really was, and I think The Politics of Jesus to a certain extent too, was not coming from an apologetic place at all.
Right.
But rather coming from a place of, like, actually, y'all, perhaps people in the LGBT community, because of their experiences, have a lot to say about modern Christianity. And the way that it has gone historically, and maybe how we can be a voice to say, hey, Jesus was actually kind of against empire, and Jesus was kind of against sort of the ruling ideas of the day from a political and spiritual aspect, and who better to embody that and speak that truth than people in the queer community.
So I'm traveling through time and space, and I'm hearing minds blow up as you talk.
Uh-huh.
And even with some knowledge of what you're talking about, there's some interesting things that you talk about here. First, there's Queer Virtue. I was part of that group. Uh-huh. And this is actually, it's a very readable book, mm-hmm. but very insightful and actually deeply Christian.
Yes.
So that has an obvious place in this conversation. Mm-hmm. But John Howard Yoder's Politics of Jesus, this is not a queer book. And John himself was not known for being super open to the gay and lesbian community.
Not surprisingly.
For that to be part of the driver here is an interesting, it's a very interesting juxtaposition.
Yes.
And part of what the Politics of Jesus, his argument is really that the church in particular is to be an alternative politic. And it really, and that's, and again, this was an episode from this season in speaking with Mike Clausen. We talked about the emerging church and some different alternatives about being political within the world. And this is the Anabaptist vision that really says, it's really not about getting elected or being in power, but about embodying something really, really different. Mm-hmm. And so to hold that up as part of your vocation, mm-hmm. there's something very ecclesial, mm-hmm. that's a big word for, very churchy about your vocation then too. Mm-hmm. So it is Jesus and the church that has you doing trans work in Texas.
Yes.
I just want to appreciate that juxtaposition to begin with. Because part of the reason I think that resonates as being true is because we're laughing at it.
Yes.
The Jesus stuff is often funny. Mm-hmm. And that part of the reason I've been asked the question several times, why do you use the word Christian? Why do you just not go by something different, Doug? Uh-huh. You have all this baggage.
Yeah.
And part of my answer is because I won't let them have the word.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's part of it. That's because that's what this is. I mean, because it's the right word. Mm-hmm. I am very much in love with the church, mm-hmm. regardless of the tumultuous relationship that we've had.
Yes.
I'm a Jesus-believing Christian, mm-hmm. love the Bible. Theologically, there's something quite orthodox and even conservative about my faith. Mm-hmm. And it's pushing the edges of me being radical socially. Mm-hmm. And those two go together for me, not separate. So I'm just want to pull all those pieces together from our other conversations mm-hmm. as well. There's something very strange and therefore beautiful, I think. Mm-hmm. That's an opinion. Mm-hmm. But there's something very strange and beautiful about pulling those two sources together. Now, again, for you, how does that emerge? Mm-hmm. That is strange. I know my journey, mm-hmm. how it gets here, and that people either know in advance or they're going to hear over several episodes. Mm-hmm. But really, how does that happen mm-hmm. that someone, especially if you're going to have this mystical part where there's a love for Jesus, uh-huh. of being loved by Jesus, getting mm-hmm. you into this place that is not at all comfortable for Christians, the Christian community in the U.S.
Yeah. And I'm thinking a little bit about the, for me personally, the piece of being known and being loved and feeling love is just really important. I think my personality, and some of this gets into, I think, my own mental health, and the reason I'm also called to the mental health profession is, like, I think I tend towards nihilism, like, very naturally. Like, that is sort of the place I go. Like, I just...
Meaninglessness, yes, nothingness.
Just darkness.
Yes.
Just some darkness mm-hmm. there. And, you know, at points in my development, particularly in adolescence, like, I really leaned into some of that, and, you know, I didn't believe in God for many, many years. Mm. But I think that fundamental message of being known and being loved is really powerful, and is really, for me, just like a personal balm for some of that. But then I also think intellectually, because that's where I tend to go a little more often. Mm. Being a therapist has been helpful for me because it's helped me kind of get into my feelings and get into my heart a little bit more. Because then, again, I think naturally I'm a more living in my head type person. But I think the tension kind of within Christianity itself, just like the paradoxes inherent within it, just intellectually engage me in a way that nothing else really does. So, like, this idea that, you know, somebody could be humiliated and crucified and yet be the Son of God. Like, that's wild. I don't think that's any less wild than me being a Christian who works with the trans community, right?
Right.
So I think those are sort of two of my answers, is that, like, within my heart, it is really helpful. And there is a sort of, like, not knowing and mystical sense within that. I did have sort of a mystical experience when I was in my 20s that I think was really informing for me, and that I cannot explain at all. Like, it got me out of my headspace and it got me out of my nihilism space, and it really just helped me see in a very intuitive, kind of heart-centered way. And then I think my head has been able to kind of come along on that journey. But I think I'm continuing to seek, and I try not to be too hard on myself. I mean, I think, sure, I did go to seminary, but I'm not a theologian by any stretch of the imagination. And like I said, I think it's a growth edge for me to continue kind of growing and learning in my spiritual life, which is why, frankly, I was really happy to accept this invitation. Like, I don't know what I'm going to say necessarily, but I will try my best. So, yeah, I guess that's kind of where I'll leave it.
We'll be right back in just one moment to hear more about mysticism and where Sarah is right now in her journey. You have probably heard several times some people on your podcasts you listen to always asking you to subscribe and to fill in reviews. Let me tell you why that's important. When you do that, it significantly changes the amount of people that will be able to find us in the search engines that might have one of the podcatchers recommend us to somebody else. So if you want us to stick around, you can do us this simple favor. Just hop on to wherever you downloaded this, give us a review, let us know how you liked it, and then go ahead and subscribe. Hey, you can always unsubscribe later, but right now, it just helps us get some momentum. We also want to invite you to go to theheartburn.net. If you go to theheartburn.net, there is a place there for you to find out more about us, about Anchor FM, about leaving us a voice message to be part of future podcasts. But the secret is share, subscribe, and review. It makes all the difference in the world. And then visit us at theheartburn.net, where you can join in on the conversation.
I have good news, everybody. I'm actually going to be giving away a t-shirt, a tote bag, a mug, actually an item of your choice, anywhere from the Heartburn Podcast Collection or from Doug Thy Neighbor, the store on Etsy, where you can go to just at etsy.com/shop/Doug Thy Neighbor. All you have to review, any review that you give, just put in a little bit of information, click a star, and I'm going to be choosing one randomly selected, not based on your review, randomly selected review each week through August and into September, and you'll receive one item, again, either from the Heartburn Podcast Collection or from the Doug Thy Neighbor store. So don't forget to review. That's all you got to do. And then I will click on it and be in touch with you, and we will send those off to the winners, but you have to review to do it.
It's clear that Sarah is a gifted theologian, if not an academic one. In the next section, I asked her, what if we stop thinking of contemplative prayer as part of a refueling station or self-care, but part of a whole, of the total of the relationship that we have with God that orients everything that we do. Sarah explained to me the way that contemplation enters into some of the action itself and how essential it is to be part of the Christian community. So let's listen again as she tells us what it means to be loved, to participate in a community of love, and how that shapes really all of our lives. This is Doug Harrison, and this is The Heartburn.
Yeah, it just really struck me. I say this all the time to my clients, just to kind of bring it into the room. And I do, you know, value so deeply the individual therapy I get to do. I'm kind of stepping back from that a tiny bit, which has been a hard thing for me, because I think that's where that lives for me, is in you know, the fact that it's the relationship that heals is a very kind of famous therapeutic idiom from Yalom, I believe. And I learn as much from my clients as they learn from me. Like, that's the secret of therapy, I think. It's that the healing takes place between us. And I think that for me is, you know, both contemplation and what fuels me. Because I think it goes back to that piece of fundamentally, and I don't say it to clients like this because, you know, boundaries and ethics, but like I definitely feel like it's such a privilege to deeply love people who don't love themselves, because I've been in that space, right? And so, and it's hard. It's a hard thing to remember all the time that, like, I am beautifully created and I'm loved. And so being able to, like, have that in the room, especially with folks who are really getting those systemic messages from elsewhere that that's not the case, I think that's where the energy comes from for me.
Your job is a trigger. I mean, it's a minefield of remembering and of your own experiences of alienation of all sorts. But what I'm hearing you say is it's in that that there is a healing. And you mentioned it earlier about, like, even it's okay as long as it's sort of out on the table that a lot of people show up because they're working their own business.
Right.
I know my first hands-on experience with Out Youth was to volunteer, and actually, in retrospect, it's a very different story. I was a little bit late coming to the game, and the person I had spoke to at Out Youth, whoever it was, bless her, helped to fast track my background check and a couple things so I could be a volunteer at the prom. The Out Youth has sponsored a high school gay lesbian prom for years, and I showed up, and I think in her interview for me, seeing why I was interested, sensed I needed this and made that space for me. And gave me a volunteer position, mostly standing on the edges watching. And I watched two cute kids show up in matching vests and do things I was never going to have the space to do in my life. And I stood at the edges and bawled my eyes out the entire evening. And I think that she made that space for me because she knew it was time or whatever. The Holy Spirit. We'll chalk it up to the Holy Spirit and Providence. But there is in this showing up and finding healing as opposed to a restlessness of there can be a psychological trauma that just gets us trying to fix things. It's sort of a mouse on a wheel of always. But I'm hearing something different. And to me, this is part of the Jesus difference in my life. You know, people say, why can't God just snap God's fingers and make poverty go away? And why does God need us to step in and mediate some of that? And part of my answer is because it's not just the poor, quote unquote, that needs the healing. It's me, the rich. And so when I show up to the trans community, to whoever, homeless people, to people who are marginalized, and I know that racism is a great example. When I show up to do the work in racial issues, it's just about getting justice for people that need justice, but it's also about healing the things that racism has done to damage my own soul. And so it may not be that contemplation is so much about fueling up to get back out on the field again, is much, it's not self-care in that sense. And this is why I think it's worth lingering on this. We read an article in the young adult group at St. David's Episcopal Church about this being the burnout generation and how self-care becomes one more thing to do. And it really stuck out to me. That was not the whole point of the article, but it did stick out to me. If Jesus is only fuel for the field, if Jesus is satisfies my spiritual needs, is there's an equation there that doesn't end up quite working out. But it becomes a real trust of other care. Like, I really have to say, mm-hmm. I pray and I sit here and I give myself in full trust to a God who I know loves me. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the equation. And for a lot of people listening, getting to the place where you just have an idea that God loves you is a huge step. Mm-hmm. But if I can and I present myself and can sit with God mm-hmm. in a loving presence, there are sacrifices, there are risks that I can take that don't cost me the same. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a different configuration.
Yeah.
So being Christian not only calls me to strange places, mm-hmm. but it reconfigures the entire thing that's suddenly my volunteer work, you know, where I'm giving suddenly becomes a place that's actually a spiritual discipline that I'm fed.
Yes.
And I'm sort of preaching the sermon here, but this is what I'm hearing from you. You know? So what is then, so you're, and your role is changing. In real talk, what's God calling you to now in this? Where is this learning edge? What does God want for you next?
I guess the reason I'm pausing is because something struck me as you were speaking just now that I kind of want
to
get out of my brain, is that there's this other really interesting paradox, if that's the right word, I think, of this sort of idea of like brokenness and wholeness that I think I'm working with also within myself and with my clients the entire time I'm in the room, of this idea of, and this has always been an interesting tension within Christianity for me, which is why I bring it up, is this kind of idea or theology that, you know, humanity inherited sin and in some ways we're kind of broken, but there's a path to wholeness. And I think that's something that I've felt through my lived experience in working with people, is just this sense that, and maybe the thing that is so powerful to me in so many words is that like we can hold brokenness and wholeness within ourselves at the same time. And those are maybe there the entire time. And I think that can create some real hope for people. And I guess sort of this may be cheesy, but in a way to answer your question, I just hope to always kind of operate within that space of, you know, being able to encounter that sense of both brokenness and wholeness and be able to kind of create hope out of that experience.
And there's some poetics play here too of broken for us.
Yeah.
In that's a way that Christians talk about Jesus. Mm-hmm. And that Henry Nouwen does a beautiful job at talking about in the Eucharist or in communion, mm-hmm. that the bread is, and this is from the Gospels, the pattern is taken, broken, blessed, taken, blessed, broken, given. Mm-hmm. And that is a pattern for us as well, mm-hmm. which to me is again, it's a wildly different economy of care and of love and of trust mm-hmm. than adding an element of self-care to our otherwise busy lives. Mm-hmm. Those are so strange for me to hold up against each other because they're so non sequiturs. So for you, there is, and that also that clarifies some things. It's different to show up and to work out your psychological issues with a client. Uh-huh. There's some ethics, blah, blah, in there that's,
yeah.
But to show up and enter into a brokenness space, mm-hmm. to be given toward wholeness because of that. The poetry's not there, but there's not a right grammar for it. That feels spiritual and life-giving.
Yes. And I would say the other piece of that for me as I kind of think about my vocation or my journey moving forward is that the importance of doing that within community, even though that's the hardest thing to do. And I think, and that's been also, I would say, a growth edge for me is, you know, sticking with community. Like both in my spiritual life, but also within kind of my out youth life, quite frankly. I think both in the sense of, you know, realizing like community is where all the magic happens, but it's also incredibly frustrating and not a utopia by any means. It's the opposite of that sometimes. It's messy. It's so, so terribly messy. Both, you know, in my work with my colleagues sometimes, but also in sort of holding as safe a space as we can for folks to come like with their brokenness and their wholeness and kind of work that out.
It's in relationship that chases out all of our nastiness.
Yes.
It gets the brokenness to the surface.
Yes.
I mean, that's where we play these things out.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's tricky. Mm-hmm. So I want to catch another sort of beautiful, not irony at all, but there's a surprise in what I think part of what you're saying is the church is important.
Yes.
To you.
It is.
As well.
Yes, it is.
And worth noting at this point is... we both attend St. David's Episcopal Church that we've mentioned. Mm-hmm. This isn't a liberal church.
No. It thinks it is a little bit sometimes. Sorry.
Or it tries. No, it has a history of... It was one of the churches in Texas early on that was given permission to do same-sex blessings. And
yes.
So that there is a history of some progressive moments.
Uh-huh.
But both theologically and politically, I mean, we are... I don't even know what to give percentages because we're also in the middle of an urban growing area and our demographics are changing, but we are held afloat by a substantially Republican, conservative, ideologically community. And those are the people that you and I turn to pray with, to read scripture with, so that we can do trans work in the middle of Texas.
Yes.
And that works.
Mm-hmm.
It's working.
Yes. And I think it's so important just on several levels, on like systemic levels, but then also on kind of personal and interpersonal levels for me of, you know, I often say I'm serving on the vestry right now, which has been an interesting.
And the vestry is a church board.
Yes. Yeah. Basically. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just really fascinating to me to, frankly, be in the room. And I would say the vestry is, you know, mostly fairly progressive. But then there's me, who I think, at least from the outside, like if they don't know this part of me, maybe, or like, yeah, just haven't heard me describe how my faith informs my work. Like, you know, I'm probably perceived as probably on the pretty
really
liberal,
radical,
really yeah. radical end of that spectrum, which is fair in some ways, you know, and then there's another person on the vestry who's, you know, pretty openly conservative. And I'm like, where else in our culture could I sit in the same room even with this person? And I think there's something really powerful about not only sitting in the room with the person, but making some decisions for the life of the church, but also praying.
Yeah. That little slice that gets exhausted in me is because I think every road of the culture wars is a dead end.
Yes.
Both sides.
100%.
And there is no win. Mm-hmm. There's no win.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, if there was a sudden, huge climate change and the blue state took over, I just have a different list of nightmares to worry about.
Sure.
And people, and different lists of people that I'd be concerned about and that I would want to protect in those circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, in part because it's not a coherent moral formation. It's a platform, which means it's sort of what floats to the top of the surface of boiling water.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that gives heat or takes heat from the cooking. You know, it just skims the surface. So what I call liberal today, I could vote into power and could turn on us and be all the opposite of what I had hoped it would be.
Mm-hmm.
And I could say that conservative or liberal either way. What we're looking for in the church, or what we're finding, like it or not, is I sit with people. Those get to float. Those pieces of politics, we don't agree.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't come to them by the same direction or for the same reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But what gives us heat, what makes us come together and be worth arguing on a vestry over how we pay for what and what color we paint the sanctuary, is worth it. Because that's part of that economy that sustains me to show up and do weird stuff. And hopefully is sustaining someone who does something very, in my mind, stereotypically conservative, a banker, downtown mm-hmm. or politician, those also attend our church mm-hmm. and are sustained by being in the room with me. Mm-hmm. And that's Jesus' body at work
yes.
doing things. Mm-hmm. So here we are. You and me, two queer kids. I use the term kids loosely.
Thank you for using that, sir. Listen, I'm the oldest employee about you, so it is tough sometimes. And
oh, mercy.
Got these gray yeah. hairs popping in. Woo.
But here we are. We're mm-hmm. you and I. I'm a burner, mm-hmm. Very involved in the Burr community. I'm a theologian. I'm active in the gay community. I have a lot of friends who don't identify anything as Christian or who identify very much as ex-Christian mm-hmm. and for justifiable reasons, angrily, some of them, and angrily so. You were doing trans work in the middle of Texas as part of Out Youth and doing systemic work, showing mm-hmm. up to the legislature, trying to make sure people could pee.
Yeah.
And we're Jesus-loving, Bible-reading, church-going Christians in the truest sense of those words. Mm-hmm. And the Jesus isn't making us be a good citizen in the sense that we're fitting in and mm-hmm. we're not scouts about this. Mm-hmm. But hopefully God's making us good citizens in the sense that this is good news mm-hmm. for our neighbors, mm-hmm. that we're finding a way to love and to do this work. Mm-hmm. So, part of me wants to say, so what do we say to people mm-hmm. who are pressing the issue from either side? There's going to be Christians that won't listen to this entire podcast because it's unpalatable.
Right.
And I'm thinking of all of my friends who just talking about faith at all is so painful. Mm-hmm. Why bother with this?
Yeah.
What now? What do we do with the world such a mess? Mm-hmm. Is the church lost? Is this hopeless? Again, I've got 15 questions in here. Swing your bat to whatever you have. Take your pick.
Well, I just want to say, I think this conversation has just really fed me, and just, I think it is the Holy Spirit. I think it's come at a time in my life when I really needed it. So I just really want to thank you for that. Because it's interesting. It's hard to have a conversation like this practically anywhere. So I can talk like very openly and passionately about the work I do with the queer and trans community in certain spaces. And I can somewhat talk about my faith and just that side of myself in certain spaces, but where the two meet are fairly rare sometimes.
And the difficulty of that is these are not, you're not a unique animal that just happens to have both Christian, a Christian engine and a pro-trans engine running alongside each other.
Right.
One is because of the other. Mm-hmm. They have a necessary relationship.
Exactly.
And I don't think and that's a chicken and egg question. Mm-hmm. I think it's being marginal that drives me to Jesus. Mm-hmm. It's Jesus that drives me to the margins.
Yes.
So
that's a perfect way to sum it up. Yeah, and also, I guess the only other thing I'm thinking about a little bit is, yeah, the privilege and intersectionality piece and, being able to coexist at St. David's, let's say, specifically with folks who, just have a different set of identities and, there's certainly folks who, leverage that privilege for the good of the body, which I think is lovely and beautiful. But I think one thing I'm struggling with now is I think that concept of privilege is considered to be a very liberal idea.
Yes. Yeah.
And so just kind of wrestling with that and like what kind of voice can I be, or is my presence enough? That's just like constantly something I'm thinking about. Like, I don't know, this doesn't answer your question at all, but it's something I was thinking about.
In many ways it does. Okay. Is my presence enough? And do you mean presence in the church, presence in the, or all the above?
Both.
Or yeah. just my being here.
Uh-huh.
And what else would there be besides the presence? Is more intentionality somehow, or
maybe, or you know, how vocal can I be or should I be in either space? Because I think I found, and again, it's tension in both of those worlds. And for me, because I think you put it beautifully, because it's like the same engine, or they inform each other. It can be like spiritually harmful for me to talk super openly about my spiritual life in the context of out youth, just because the church has been so painful.
And is being.
Correct. Yeah. And so that's an interesting tension. And then, you know, in the maybe space at St. David's or at the Seminary of the Southwest or any sort of typical Episcopal space, because those are the waters I roll in. You know, I like to joke I'm like gay for a living, you know, and that's something like I think a fair amount of people know and that I bring to the table. And I think for me, it's been a tough reconciliation sometimes. Mm. And just kind of continuing to figure out, like, how do I show up in both of these spaces being whole? Again, like that brokenness thing comes to mind again, but not brokenness, but more like fragmentedness.
Yeah.
And I'm constantly, I think, trying to bring my whole self to the table and reconcile those things. So I think that's the journey for now.
I'm constantly trying to bring my whole self to the table and reconcile those things. So I think that's the journey for now. I'll tell you the truth. I had no idea just how deep, how nuanced, and how just spiritually nourishing that whole conversation would end up being, even when I sat down to begin the interview with Sarah. What a phenomenal human being, and what an incredible take on life, and what incredible work that she does. I am so honored to call her a friend and so pleased that she was able to share her time. You can find more of her work again at outyouth.org, and if you want more conversations like this, I certainly do, and it's going to require some of your help. You know the usual. It would really be super significant if you would subscribe or leave a short review, even just one sentence, at any of the places where you found this podcast, Apple, Stitcher, Google Play, any of these places. You can also find us at theheartburn.net. Where you can leave a message for us to incorporate into future shows. You can also find us on Twitter at The Heartburn, but your participation is pretty much what makes or breaks it. And I love having these conversations, and I love having the knowledge that these conversations are out there for people to engage and listen to. This is one of those podcasts that you actually want to send to other people and say, hey, listen to this. This is what I'm talking about. This is actually something interesting for us to discuss. So, ordinary people.